Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhouseonline.com.au.
A couple of months ago, my wife Meredith and I saw a great production called The Ultimate Rock and Roll Jam, commemorating one very special moment when four of the greats of early rock and roll, Elvis Presley, Jerry Lee Lewis, Johnny Cash and Carl Perkins, all found themselves in the Sun Studios in Memphis and had this most amazing ultimate jam there. My very special guest on our first Open House tonight was the star of that production. He's been a great musical hero of mine for decades, and you'll hear why in just a moment, in two songs he's actually especially produced for us tonight. There was one moment in the show that got me thinking. This explored the enormous impact that gospel music had on rock and roll. It was just a couple of weeks after I'd been asked to take on Open House, and I started to wonder, what if I asked Doug Parkinson to come on our first show and take us through that journey? And he said yes. Doug Parkinson, it's great to have you with us.
Thank you.
On Open House. Welcome. I know that the era had such a great impact on you. It was the kind of time when you were first finding that spark of music in your own life. Tell us how you got started.
Well, all the typical kid things. There was always a radio on at home, which was great. Lucky, and the music was very, very exciting, and all the testosterone fueled puberty years, it was wonderfully, wonderfully exciting, and I had no plans whatever as a career being involved with music. I was just your typical kid, and footy and cricket and surfed, and I grew up on Sydney's northern beaches, and it wasn't until a couple of years later that, before that, we went to church. My parents would let us mingle up at the church, the Baptist church at Colleroy Plateau. That was the only place I could get out of the house and meet girls. And so that was all nice. And then a couple of years after that, I actually became a choir boy at St. Faith's Church at Narrabin.
I could just picture it, Doug.
Yeah. I was much slimmer and much smaller and younger, but I can't work out what it was. I loved the sound of the choir, but I think I enjoyed dressing up in the black and white robes too. The whole process. So, but that was it until I got up and sang at a dance one night, but that's a different story. But all the early 50s rock stuff really excited me, and I had one particular friend who was mad for it. So that's really where it all began for me.
You actually asked to get up and sing at that dance.
Well, look, we in those days, there was a dance called the Narrabeen Stomp at Narrabeen Surf Club, and it was one of the biggest dances in Sydney suburbs, and there were lots of these dances. It was around the big surfing craze at the time, and five of us, I remember, in the car one night, we went to this dance, this stomp, and there were five of us in the car, five kids, and we called into the pub on the way. And it's a terrible thing to admit, but this is relatively
age what?
Look, underage.
Yes, that's all we need to know.
All the wrong stuff. And in those days, you could buy three bottles of Tui's Flag Ale, the long necks, for a dollar.
Okay.
So five of us, and we would chug-a-lug these things outside the dance. Now, two of the blokes in the car, they went there for a fight. Two of the blokes in the car went there looking for girls, and I went there probably looking for girls too, but for some reason, I asked the band leader if I could get up and sing a song, and he gave me permission, and that was the end of me.
It's an amazing thing to do, to have the kind of front to get up and say I'd like to sing, to say yes.
Well, it was all the Dutch courage.
Yes. And it was okay.
It was okay, and it felt wonderful. And
what felt so wonderful? Was it the crowd? Was it the music?
Everything. But that sense of being able to perform and sing and let it out, And I can imagine how terrible it would have sounded. It would have been.
Yeah.
It would have been very primitive and awful, but it was such a wonderful, exhilarating feeling.
They were raw days, it would have fitted in.
Yeah.
The interesting thing that you explore in The Ultimate Rock and Roll Jam, which is what got me starting, is the very significant impact that the so-called gospel music had on rock and roll, and also the impact that it had on people like Elvis Presley to you.
All of them.
Tell us a bit about that journey, that link.
Well, it's a very famous quote that Sam Phillips, the owner of Sun Records, who recorded all these great artists and was responsible for the career of many of them, including a lot of great black artists like B.B. King and Howlin' Wolf and a whole bunch of guys. But Elvis, Johnny Cash, Jerry Lee, Carl Perkins, a whole lot of guys... They were all born in very poor economic circumstances, and they hung around with and were susceptible to all the black music that was sung by the people who worked the cotton fields, who were once slaves but were now sort of indentured workers but were paid nothing and lived in poverty, and that music was the only thing that they had in their lives.
Yes,
it was absolutely. It was absolutely profound influence on their lives. And this is where they heard these people singing, and they more or less copied and absorbed this, so that when they came and started doing their rock and roll, all of these wonderful influences, all the gospel songs and the spirituals and the whole thing, they were already embedded in their songs.
Mm, it's amazing, Jim.
That's incredible.
And it was people like Elvis. He was profoundly affected by gospel
music. Very much.
Music.
Believe it or not, everyone knows now, it's an old story now, but he was basically a very religious person. I think his mother was very religious. And Elvis was an absolute gospel nut. Even in his heyday, when he was doing two or three shows a night at the hotels in Las Vegas, incredibly high-powered, draining shows, he would then request everyone's presence, the band, the singers, everyone upstairs in the penthouse after the show. And it wasn't a request, it was basically an order. And they would sing all night, sometimes till 4 a.m. in the morning, singing gospel music.
Yeah.
Mm.
So what was it about, musically, about gospel music that kind of fitted in or developed, was able to be developed so much by those early rock and rollers?
Well, they had good melodies. The songs themselves intrinsically were beautiful and simple.
Yeah.
The beautiful, simple melodies, wonderful lyrics, of course, and just the structures of the songs. We may think of them as being quite primitive now, but they have still lasted to this day.
Too right.
They've just stood the test of time. They became the foundation where a lot of the more outrageous ones broke away from the strict discipline of the church and broke out and applied this wildness and this freedom, this wonderful, exciting spirit. But it was all based on gospel music. All the rock and roll was based on the gospel music. A lot of people say the blues, but it's blues and a lot of gospel, mainly gospel, I think.
Because one of the interesting things that subsequently happened was the great controversy that rock and roll lit, especially in the church, and you'd have people burning records and saying, this rock and roll is evil.
The devil.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
It was kind of spooky stuff, but... And, of course, a lot of people didn't think it was going to last. They thought it would be a very transient sort of thing. But, of course, it lasted and evolved, which all music does. And it's just a part of our lives now.
Mm. One of the songs I heard you sing in the production of The Ultimate Rock and Roll Jam is one of those gospel songs of, I just think, such a sweet age of innocence. It's called Just a Little Talk with Jesus.
It's a beautiful thing.
And it was recorded by Elvis Presley, among others. One of such sweet simplicity, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. It's about a person who, throughout all the troubles and cares of his daily life, if he just sits down and has a conversation with Jesus, things become clear and all the rubbish goes away and evaporates. And it's such a simple, beautiful message.
Yeah. Simple as this song is, it I think also says so much about God and the Christian faith. And here's the great treat for us. Doug has kindly agreed to put together a version exclusively for Open House for our first night tonight.
It is too, you know.
It is, yeah.
This is from me to you.
You're a very kind man. I'm in awe. I'm going off my face. This is Doug Parkinson, just for Open House, just a little talk with Jesus.
Oh, I once was lost in sin, but Jesus took me in. And then a little light from heaven filled my soul. It bathed my heart in love and wrote my name above. And just a little talk with Jesus made me whole. So let us have a little talk with Jesus. Let us tell him all our troubles. He will hear our faintest cry, and he will answer by and by. When you feel a little prayer wheel turning, then you know that a fire is burning. And just a little talk with Jesus makes it right. Sometimes my path seems drear, without a rainshade, and then a cloud of doubt may hide the light of day. Oh, the mist of sin may rise and hide the starry skies, but just a little talk with Jesus clears. Have a little talk with Jesus. Let us tell him all our troubles. Yeah, he will. Hear our faintest cry. He will answer by and by. And when you feel a little prayer, we'll turn him. And you know a little fire is burning. Just a little talk with Jesus makes it right.
You're with Open House across Australia, very first Open House in our new era. It's great to have you with us, and it's great to have our very special guest here tonight, Doug Parkinson. Doug, great to have you with us. We've just heard before the break just a little talk with Jesus. When you hear words like, I may have doubts and fears, my eyes be filled with tears, but Jesus is a friend who watches day and night. I go to him in prayer. He knows my every care. For those people in that early slave trade, the slave people from whom we get gospel music, which ultimately became rock and roll, it was about their only hope, wasn't it?
It was. Yes. It was their only hope. And it's easy for us now to look back as historians, I suppose, but gee Lee, can you imagine what... imagine the misery and the awfulness of it all.
Yes.
And that's right. And Jesus was the only... only thing they could cling on to give them hope and a reason to keep going.
Yeah.
It's dreadful, isn't it?
Yeah. You've done a lot of work. You've become kind of an amateur historian yourself, tracing how various nationalities and various influences of music really quite ended up in that south area of the United States.
I find it fascinating. Yeah. And as you say, now that in my sort of middle years, I still have such a curiosity. I like to know how and why it worked and what they did. I'm fascinated by all this. But, I mean, a lot of things, this cross-pollination thing just absolutely fascinates me with the black people and the white people, and then the French, of course, who migrated from Canada.
Okay.
They brought another style, genre of music, and put that in the mix. And you get all this wonderful stuff. And I don't know why, Lee, it's not just... People say to me, well, you should be more interested in Australian, you know, music. And I am, of course. But
yes.
But this is unique stuff that I'm talking about from the south of America. And it just absolutely thrills me when I hear something and that I've loved and liked, and then I read and find out later on, and it's revealed to me that certain people that I've admired or certain processes were employed to make that thing so wonderful for me. It's just exciting.
Yeah.
I'm a bit of a historian, as you said now.
Professor Parkinson.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Aussie music is great. We could have another whole conversation about that. But this is music that transformed the world of music, really.
Of course.
Isn't it? Yes.
Yeah. It's amazing stuff. And it takes many forms, of course, with the different use of various instruments. I mean... the gospel thing can be played basically with anything. That helped make it more accessible as well.
Yes.
People could improvise and even invent instruments and get away and still thump out a song.
And they did. One other part of your life I wanted to ask you about was your role in Jesus Christ Superstar.
Oh, yes.
You were the bad man. You were Judas.
I think I said to you the other day when I spoke to you on the phone, in all my my acting or my theatre career, if you could describe it as
extensive as it is,
I've never been I was never the romantic lead. I was always the villain.
Yeah.
And in every one I was in, I got killed off. And, of course, I got bumped off because I was a villain.
Yeah.
But, yes, of course, Judas met a terrible fate. And... my son, actually, today, I found a couple of old photos for you from from the show. And there's a very slim and young Doug standing next to a very beautiful and slim Marcia Hines. And there's one there with Trevor White. But my son, younger son, Daniel, said to me when he used to watch the show, it was so long ago, he was very disturbed every night that I was hung. He it kind of freaked
me
out.
So how old was he at that stage?
Oh, gee. That would have been early 80s, so he's 39 now.
Yeah.
So everyone do the math. I'm too tired to... I can't even work it out.
He was young enough for it to be impactive on him.
Yes, he was horrified.
Yeah.
And I had to say, son, this is what Dad does for a living, and it's all smoke and mirrors.
And I'm back.
Yeah.
The cast members in Jesus Christ Superstar, what did they think of the story? Did it impact them, or was it just another gig for them?
Oh, gee, no. In those days, it was really groundbreaking stuff.
Yes.
As we all know now, very much a departure from what was considered... standard normal theatre practice. And Andrew Lloyd Webber wrote this fabulous, groundbreaking piece, once again using sort of rock instruments and lyrics and things which were very rock and roll-ish, pertaining to the greatest story that ever was, and using all these brand new techniques. It was very groundbreaking stuff. And even though a lot of my fellow performers, I must confess, I've not met many who are...
I think I know what you're going to say.
Yes. it's just not that kind of business. But I've met quite a few.
Yes, sure.
And there were quite a few of the kids there who were... It was terribly important, the religious side of it. So, yes.
Yeah. A very wise person once said of the media, and I especially think this applies to the music business, I'd rather be a survivor than a star. And I'd have to say, Doug Parkinson, you're one of those rare birds who I think have been both in this great industry of music.
Thank you.
How do you reflect back on such a rich and blessed life that you've had in this business?
I don't know. Sometimes I just say, why me? I have no answer for that. I had no plan for this. And the way it happened was purely by accident, I feel. But once the penny dropped and I knew that this was to be, I think one of my good points of character is that I then threw everything I had into it, and I decided if it was to be this, then I would try to be the very best I could.
Mm. And that you have. And I just have one last thing for our listeners tonight that I've asked of Doug to wrap up our interview. I thought at the time what a treat it would be, get him to sing Just a Little Talk with Jesus, but if we could also get him to perform one of the Christian faith's most well-known pieces of music, whose lyrics have inspired and lifted up millions of people over the generations, and he said yes to that as well. Doug Parkinson, thank you so much for being here on our first night on Open House.
It's been an absolute pleasure, and I wish you all the success with your new program. Good luck, Lee.
Good on you, mate. Thank you very much. Doug Parkinson and Amazing Grace.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast, thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology. To hear more from Open House, visit openhouseonline.com.au.